church life. He says, we'll begin reading in verse 1, "Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters, with all purity. Honor widows that are widows indeed, but if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. Now she that is a widow indeed and desolate trusteth in God, continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth, and these things give in charge that they may be blameless." There in verse 5, he begins to... He's talking about the requirements or what a widow should be in order for the church to take her in and to bear her financial responsibility. And there's a lot of things we could learn from this passage of Scripture. And there's a lot to be said about the responsibility of children to parents and to not just to parents, but aunts, uncles, anyone in their family, the obligation and responsibility they have to them. But he begins to set apart what is a widow that the church should care for, and it's not my focus to necessarily look at that, but as I was reading through that, it seemed to bring to light a certain way of Christian living, and that what was expected out of the widow really is what should be expected for everybody. And he speaks of who is a widow indeed in verse 5. She that is a widow indeed and desolate, she, in other words, she doesn't have children to care for her. And then he lays out some other things. Trusteth in God and continueth in supplications and prayers night and day. I think when I read that of Anna back in Luke chapter number 2, there was Anna in verse 36 in the temple. It says, "And there was one Anna, a prophetess, a daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was of great age and had lived with a husband 7 years from her virginity. And she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And she, coming in at that instant, gave thanks likewise unto the Lord, and spake of him to all them that look for redemption in Jerusalem." This widow mentioned back at the birth of Christ, she fits that bill. She was just giving herself completely to prayer, to supplications, just completely had given herself to the work of the Lord and given herself over to that. Notice in 1 Timothy 5, verse 6, in contrast to that, "But she that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth." There's two paths that the widow could take, and they're not unlike any path that we can take either. There's either a path of devotion to the Lord or a path of pleasure. And notice that phrase there, "she is dead while she liveth." She's very empty. She's walking death. And as it is true for the widow, it's true for anybody that picks a road of pleasure. It's an empty life. It's a very dead. She's dead while she lives. But it was interesting to me as I read that, not that I've ever had to face the issue of the church supporting a widow necessarily, but the idea to me of those two very separate roads. We like to believe that there's kind of a blend or a mixture of the two roads, but they're very separate. And we'll see more of that as we read on. And these things give in charge that they may be blameless. Verse 8, but if any provide not for his own, especially they of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. Let not a widow be taken in to the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man. Just don't take in young women. They can either work or marry, or, you know, just some common sense there. But what struck me was verse number 10. Well reported of for good works. Semicolon. And then it lists works. Works that are good. And not just for women, not just for widows, but these are some works that Paul instructs Timothy as good and profitable for God's people, as members of his church. Notice, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. These are some of the works of God's people. Some of the things that should fill our daily lives. Entertaining strangers, serving one another, washing the saints' feet. I know we don't wear sandals, and we've got Dr. Scholl's and everything else, and we don't necessarily need to wash one another's feet, it speaks of just humble service. We to be engaged in lodging strangers or witnessing to strangers, bringing strangers into our home and setting them around our table. And that's one of the things that I miss the most about mission work is just having people over and talking to them about the Lord. Lodging strangers, washing the saints' feet. If she have relieved the afflicted, be of service. And I mentioned that there are two very separate roads, the road of pleasure that she could have took, or the road of supplication and prayer and a road of service. One road is very empty, and the other road is very fulfilling. They couldn't be more opposite. If you were to try to blend the two roads, which many do today, you would be, I guess, half empty, which is how many are today. Just kind of blah. There's just, don't really, many just not really do anything really worthwhile. We pursue vanity, a lot of vanity in our daily lives as we have opportunity. When you think about the widow is somebody who has great opportunities for time, you know. Massive opportunities for time. What do you do with that time? It's a good question to the widow, but it's a good question for all of us. What do we do with our time? When the opportunity of time comes, do we pursue vanity? And then that's why we feel empty. She that liveth in pleasure is dead while she liveth. Just deadness, just emptiness. But notice the fulfilling things there in verse 10. Bringing up children, it's very fulfilling. Lodging strangers, washing the saints' feet, doing something for your brethren. It's fulfilling. She have relieved the afflicted. You've come to the aid of those that have needs, those that are in crisis, those that have whatever it may be. They may be in health crisis, physical crisis. They may be emotional. They may have suffered loss in their family. Whatever it may be, the business of relieving the afflicted. Verse 11, but the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith, and wherewithal, notice verse 13, in contrast to the right road in verse 10, in contrast to that, they learn to be idle. I'm afraid that many are idle today. You know, we have heard all of our lives that women are to be homemakers, they're to be keepers at home. The Bible teaches that, and we've taught that, and somehow in that message we we forgot to tell them what to do, I think, at times. Somehow in the midst of that, we've not latched on to what we should be doing, and men are responsible for that as much as women. Notice, and with all, they learn to be idle. And I'm not blaming women, because as men, we're heads of the home. We were supposed to set the tone, set the direction of the home. With all, they learn to be idle. Notice the next part, wandering from house to house. And it's not wrong to visit friends and do things with friends, but that's not daily life. That's not the daily calling of the believer. They learn to be idle, going from house to house. And he says, not only idle, but tattlers, also busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. This is the danger it's a danger of idleness to anyone, man or woman, who is idle. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. These are the fulfilling things that we're to engage in. Not just women, but men as well. And as I read this, it was just to me, it was, this passage to me was a higher calling. To me, as I read what she did, what a true widow would do with her time there in verse number 5, in this time that she now had past child rearing, and now that her husband has left her in verse 5, that she gave herself to supplications and prayers night and day. Night and day speaks of all the time, had given herself to the work of the Lord all the time. Now, I don't believe that there's anything wrong with entertainments and socializing and things of that nature. There's nothing wrong with that. But we live in a day and age in which it seems to come upon us every day. I mean, it seems like there's a social engagement to go to all the time. I mean, it never ends. There's always a birthday party. There's always a family reunion. There's always... It's constant. We live in a time where it just comes upon us constantly. In the book of Job, if we turn back to the book of Job, and in the first chapter, Job in chapter 1 and verse 3 speaks of the substance of Job. His substance was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 she-asses, and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all of the men of the East. Certainly, if he was the greatest of all the men of the East, his children had very little to worry about. They could either employ themselves in the father's business or whatever it may be, they had very little to worry about. And verse number 4 is the one that stands out to me. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their three sisters to eat and to drink with them. They were, you know, they had their birthdays, they had whatever. But verse number 5, and it was so when the days of their feasting was gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, rose up early in the morning. This was of a concern to Job, the folly that seemed to come into the lives of his children. So he rose early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all, for Job says, it may be my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. I think about the days that we live in, and even though we're in a bad economy, so they say, we still do live in days of feasting. I mean, I don't see a lot of restaurants closing. Cell phone stores are still doing well. We still have our entertainments. We still have our you know, much of our enjoyments around us. And perhaps too much so. And we have more ability than any generation ever has before to entertain ourselves. You know, you can You can pull out your phone and watch a movie on it now. We're so entertained in the day and age that we live in. It's so easy for us to take our time and pursue folly with it. It's very easy. And it's not only easy, it's considered the norm. We tell people, well, you deserve some time. And then you pursue this emptiness, you pursue this vanity. I think of Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon said, I tried everything there was to try. And he said it was vanity, it was empty. And then he went further than that. He said it was vexation of spirit. It also ate me up. It was not only empty, useless things, but it also took away my spirit. And so as I read this about this section here in 1 Timothy, that it calls, of course, women, obviously it calls them to a higher purpose and to a higher calling of a life of child rearing, a life of prayer, a life of serving others, relieving the afflicted, following every good work, not being idle, not spending all the time visiting friends, not tattling, not busybodies, not gossiping. And though it calls women to, you know, all of those things, I believe it calls all of us to that. It calls all of us to a life that's not empty. These things that are given to us in the Bible, they're not meant to restrain us from pleasure. They're meant to lead us to what will be satisfying, what will be fulfilling, what will truly bring us lasting joy. There's only so much joy that you can get from the things of this world, you know. When we lived up north, my wife's aunt had jet skis, and she said, you know, you guys, you live up there, you know, whenever you want, go over there and ride those things, you know. And we'd go over there, and I'd cut the grass for her, and I'd go out and ride the jet skis, and I'd go around and around and around and around until I was literally dizzy. I'd get off, and I'd lay on the shore, and I'm like, I'm dizzy. This isn't fun. It's lost its, you know, and we did it two or three times, and after a while I just said, I don't really want to do that anymore. There's only so much of it that you can take in, and much of the things of the world are like that. There's only so much of it before it only has so much joy that it can bring. Turning back to the book of Ecclesiastes concerning some of those things that he wrote about. And you know, in Ecclesiastes, we'll read in chapter 9, and again, these things aren't to sadden us, they're not to beat us over the head, they're just to call us to a higher life. After all that he'd looked at and all that he'd seen, he said in chapter 9, Ecclesiastes, verse 9, he says, live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. All the days of thy vanity, for this is thy portion in this life, and thy labor which thou takest under the sun. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might, for there is no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave, whither thou goest. He said in another, I believe it was somewhere in chapter number 8, he concluded, he said that you should just labor Well, verse 7 in the same chapter, "Go thy way, eat thy bread with joy, drink thy wine with a merry heart, for God now accepteth thy works." Just labor, enjoy the fruit that God gives you, live joyfully with the wife thou lovest all the days of thy vanity. This is one of the portions, one of the blessings, one of the things that that God gives us that's not empty, it's not that's not vexation of spirit, that's not vanity. I had a gentleman come into my office the other day, and he just had to put his wife in a nursing home, and he was just telling about how lonely he was. He just said, "I'm just so lonely." He said, "I would sit and watch a TV show, and I go to comment on the show, and nobody's there." And he just poured his heart out, and it struck me, and I just went home and thanked the Lord for my home. I thanked the Lord for my family. Thank the Lord for my wife, still young and with me, and some of those things are some of the most fulfilling things. Just to have a home, just to bring up children, some of the best times, most fulfilling things in life. And so I don't look at this passage as in 1 Timothy as necessarily beating us over the head or. You know, telling us that we need to stop everything else we're doing and do something else, but that it's just calling us to a more fulfilling and a higher life that we can live in Christ and find a greater joy. When you look at Anna in Luke chapter number 2, she lost her only love, but as a result of that, she fell in love with the Lord and served him and found all of her joy in him, and she found a very fulfilling life to what would look like to the world, what is painted by the world to be a very empty life. She lived a very fulfilling life in Christ, and that's what I believe these scriptures are calling us to, that higher life, and we'll stop there for now.